as we think about Ecclesiastes, Solomon thought about time. And, you know, what he shows us as we think about it, as we think about this illustration, three things. One, we are very, very small. Time is pretty big. But God is ginormous. Don't you love that word? Ginormous. Say that with me. You have to say it with a deep voice. Ginormous. God is ginormous. You know, I've been thinking about this illustration, I've been thinking about God, thinking about time, and I have some observations about you and me and God in time, and they're just my observations. You might disagree. Jerry might have better ones, but these are my observations, and you're stuck with me this morning because I have the microphone. So I have two microphones. But four basic observations. First is God doesn't seem to be in a hurry. You ever notice that? You can't wait to get there. You can't wait for something. And God's like, yeah, later. He doesn't seem to be in a hurry. And I wonder if it's because he is so big and we're a little fat. But it's just an observation. But as you think about it, if time has a beginning and time has an end, and God is way, way bigger than time, he's already there when we're hoping to get there. He's been waiting for us to catch up with us. That's my first observation. Second observation is that we seem to be in this grand hurry, a rush. And maybe because we are so small and we recognize that time is big and we want to get our fair share of it. I don't know. It's an observation. Thirdly, God is headed to a very particular end. And actually, the end isn't really the end. The end is just the beginning of, well, forever. And we can't process that. It's so big because we can think about seconds, you know, tick, tick, tick. And we can think about next week, and we can think about next Christmas, but we start getting fuzzy when we get too far out there, but God's already there waiting for us. So he has this end in mind, and we're just scurrying around trying to do something that means something and get someplace that we want to be. And finally, we are stuck, you and I, we are stuck in this thing we call the rat race. Anybody here who understands rat race and knows they're part of it, say rat race with me. Rat race. Yeah, see, we're there. And we're in this thing, and it's not really a race, because you can't win the race. Because a race, somebody wins, somebody loses, but it just feels like a race. And maybe, if we thought about God like we're thinking about him for this moment here, wouldn't it make more sense to listen to God, who's already there where we think we're headed, and already knows how it's going to end before we even get there to do whatever it is that ends. And so I want to think about that this morning. Now, as I think about these observations, one of the other things that kind of wraps around all those observations is the truth that time is kind of slipping through our fingers, like sand. But I don't think it's actually slipping through our fingers because it's not like sand. It's a measurable entity, but it's not like sand. And so rather than slipping through our fingers, I think it's actually slipping away from us. And we're doing one of a couple things with it. We might just be not making use of time, or we might be wasting time, but it's spilling out with no value to it. And so at the end of any given day, any given week, or if you're one of those people who gets to the end of the year, and before you make New Year's resolutions, how many do that? Make New Year's resolutions. Wow. Hell, nobody here makes resolutions. Maybe it's why we get nothing done. I don't know. But, you know, we make New Year's resolutions, but usually before we make the resolutions, we evaluate what we did or didn't do for the last year. Maybe you don't do that either. I'm not even going to ask that. I'll break my heart. So, let's think about time. Time, our time, not God's time, because he has all the time in the world. Beyond. But how much time do we actually have? Did you know, and maybe if you did the math, 86,400 seconds. That's what you get every single day. Now, it doesn't sound like a lot, or maybe it does sound like a lot, but it's 24 hours broken into seconds. And it doesn't matter what time you get up. You get the same amount. So those of you who feel bad about those of us who get up at the crack of dawn, so we can get the day started, and you wake up at the crack of mid-morning, you get the same amount of time in your day. Just you slept a whole bunch of it, but you still get the same amount of time every day. Now, there's four unbending rules about this 86,400 seconds we get every day. First, time is measurable. We can know exactly what we have used and what we have wasted. Unbendable. That goes forever. Time is limited. As we showed in the illustration, it has a beginning and it has an end. And for you, your time is limited as well. You can't buy more time. You know, like that game, want to buy a ball? You can't do that. You can't, you know, get to 6 o'clock in the evening, realize you've done squat for the day. Hey, God, can I get an extra hour in? You can't do that. Thirdly, time cannot be redeemed if it's not used. It's not like a debit card or a gift card to your favorite restaurant, and you go and you pay, and they tell you you got $3.16 left on it, and you could redeem that purchase. You can't do that with time. Once it's passed, unused, it's done. It's gone. You can't go back and use that again or try to use it. And fourthly, and this is hard, and we'll play with this because Solomon was caught up in this, time seems to beckon us forward. And I know we think about the good old days because in our memory, our jaded memory, it seems like they were good old days, but they were just days. And the other thing is there is no neutral pullover. You can't be racing along in a race and say, okay, I'm going to step out, and it goes by, and you can jump back in. It keeps going, even if you decide you're not going to play the game. And here's some truths. And I thought hard about this, and I was wondering if I should give these to you, because I don't want to crush your little hearts, but there are some things that you need to know about time as well. These are truths as well. Time doesn't really care about your checkbook. Time doesn't care about your checkbook. You still get the same amount of time every day. Time doesn't care about your age. You still get the same amount of time every day. Time doesn't care about your agenda. It doesn't matter how many things you want to pack into your day, you still get the same amount of time. And time doesn't care if you get up late or get up early, you still get the same amount of time. And you and I talk about time. We talk about it all the time. And I wrote down some of my favorites that I hear people say, and I even hear myself saying them. Like, time flies when you're having fun. And Carol, what do we respond to that? Even when it's not fun. Yes, time flies. Time passes. Tick tock, tick tock, tick tock. And time feels like it's crawling. I wish I had more time. I wish this moment could last forever. I can't wait for this to be over. Have you ever said any of those? Maybe their arms are all broken. Oh, there they are. They're moving. You're not playing with me this morning. People have written about time. Famous people. Let me tell you some of the things that famous people have said about time. How did it get so late so soon? Dr. Seuss. Yesterday is gone. Tomorrow is not yet come. We have only today. Let us begin. Mother Teresa. Time is the longest distance between two places. Tennessee Williams wrote that into the script for The Glass Menagerie. And time is what we want most, but what we use worst. William Penn. Mahatma Gandhi said, there is more to life than simply increasing its speed. And it's such a shame to waste time. We always think we have so much of it. Mitch Albom, for one more day. And so we have the question, what exactly is time? Now, there are some people measure time in terms of now and later. And I actually had a friend very early in my ministry who had spent this huge block of time in Africa. And when we met, I lived with a watch. I had a watch, had a big dial on it, had secondhand, and that watch controlled my life. And this guy said, Les, you're going to make yourself crazy. You need to do what my friends in Africa do. There's two times, now and later. Now and later. You can't do anything about what's gone. You can't actually do what's coming. You might think about it, but live now. And I kind of embrace that. I don't wear a watch anymore, although there's clocks and cell phones and things are beeping all the time. But I'm trying to live that. I think maybe I'm healthier, at least I'm saner. But other people think time is the clicking of the second hand clock. And it's measuring for them a period of time for an action or a condition or a set of circumstances, and it was 18 minutes and 3 seconds. Wow, 10 seconds? It felt like an hour. You know, it's that kind of thing. Or there's this other time, and this is the one that many people apply to God, and it's this non-spatial continuum. It's not clicked by a clock. It's measured in terms of events that succeed one another, from the past to the present to the future. And so when we think about God being, say, this room, and time being this short rope, do you catch what that means about you and me? He's already there whenever we get there. And he's beyond that. And so there's nothing that you and I will ever experience, nothing that you and I will ever fret over, that he doesn't already see it. And so when he's measuring time, as we're understanding it, he's just seeing this happen, and this happened, and this happened, and he was there with us as they were happening, and we're in the midst of these happenings going, I've run out of time. Which maybe is why God doesn't seem like he's in a hurry. And you and I are racing because we're trying to measure our lives in moments, not experience. And so I want to play with this with us as we think about jumping into the text. So we're in Ecclesiastes 3 this morning. If you have your Bible, you can turn there. We're going to look at the 13 verses at the beginning of the chapter. And what I want to do is I'm going to read it to you. And I'm going to list out three principles, just three principles, that I think we need to take home with us. So listen to Solomon's words. There is a time for everything and a season for every activity under heaven. A time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, and a time to uproot, a time to kill, and a time to heal, a time to tear down, and a time to build, a time to weep, and a time to laugh, a time to mourn, and a time to dance, a time to scatter stones, and a time to gather them, a time to embrace, and a time to refrain, a time to search, and a time to give up, a time to keep, and a time to throw away, a time to tear, a time to mend. A time to be silent, a time to speak, a time for love and a time to hate, a time for war, a time for peace. And what does the worker gain from the spoil? I have seen the burden God has laid on men. He has made everything beautiful in his time. He has also set eternity in the hearts of men that they cannot fathom what God has done from the beginning to the end. And I know that there is nothing better for men than to be happy and do good while they live, that everyone may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all his toil. This is the gift of God. Principle number one, God has a plan. We see that in the first verse and part of verse 11. There's time for everything in the season, for every activity under heaven. He has made everything beautiful in its time. And just because God's big, bigger than time and outside of time, and includes time within himself, this is part of his creation, he still is interested in it. Now here in this text, Solomon lists 14 couplets. They're pairs of opposites, you know, live, die, kill, wipe or heal. And they're a literary construct, a structure of literature called a merismus. Say that with me, merismus. Sounds like Marissa, doesn't it? But it's merismus. And what it is, it captures the extremes and everything in between. And so in each of those couplets, you might think, well, it's either this or that. But what Solomon is actually doing is this and that and everything in between, because they're part of life. And what he does is he identifies the start and finish, that we are born and we will die. We see that in verse 2. And then the remaining couplets are possibilities we might face in our daily lives. Now, the first couplet, birth to death, is obviously chronological and actually applies to all of us. And even the characters in the scriptures that beat death, as it were, they also have an ending in time as well. But when we think about the other couplets, though, they're more random. And actually, as they seem like extremes, they're actually individual things that you or I might be part of or partake of or choose or try to reject from our lives. And some of them we will do only once, and some we'll do repeatedly through our lives. And at the end of the day, what Solomon has done for us is he has offered a comprehensive description of what you and I call daily life, because this is what life is about. All those pieces identified in those couplets, those 14 couplets. And so as we weave together Solomon's words, phrases like time for everything, season for every activity, and he has made, that is, God has made everything beautiful in his time, we find that God is indeed sovereign, that he indeed has a plan for his creation, all of it from start to finish. He's not making it up as we go along. He understands what it's going to be. You and I are living in the moment, experiencing the moment, and it is truly a new moment for you and me because we're there for the very first time. It is our experience. We grow with God towards this beautiful end. He's working that plan. I love what Paul wrote in Romans chapter 8, verse 28. He said, "And we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose." And I find this amazing amount of comfort in knowing that God's great plan for his children, those who love him, and that he has that set in motion. And when we arrive on the scene, when we squeal our first squawk as we're born, we begin that timeline with God, our lives, that little speck that was in the middle of time, which set in God. And he travels with us. And there's never a moment, even when you or I would say something like, "Where is God in this?" He's right there in it. And you and I are missing his presence. But God's working his plan. And you see his ultimate desire, according to the words that Paul offers, according to the words that Solomon will ultimately offer as he finishes this book, is that God has our best in mind. He yearns for us to know him and to live the life that he has died through Jesus and rose from the tomb to make possible. Principle number two, yearn for eternity. This is probably going to be the hardest one for us to grasp. But this is in verse 3, beginning in the middle of the verse. He has also set eternity in the hearts of men, yet they cannot fathom what God has done from beginning to end. And so, as we think of our timeline here, the beginning with Genesis and the end with Revelation, God has set what he's doing in our hearts. Now, part of this phrase, this verse, this sentence here, that I cannot explain away, is that yet they cannot fathom what God has done from the beginning to the end. That is so clear. What he has done, he has placed something in us that drives us in our lives, and yet we don't understand it. Solomon, the wisest man, he said, "We can't understand that." And so I want to make a suggestion this morning. Just get over yourself. You can't understand it all. None of us. We're not that smart because we're a speck, and God is huge. And he's beyond these walls. But we want to know. And this wanting to know comes out in this yearning that we have. And the yearning comes out in time. Because we yearn for what's next. And there's this drive that we have to look into tomorrow. And just think about it. Some of you have been around and you can see all of these. But we have some very young people in this building. Most of them are downstairs squealing, having a great time. But they can't wait to be what's next. You know, if they're 3, they can't wait to be 5. If they're 5, they can't wait to be 7. If they're 7, they wish they were 14. When they're 14, their parents wish they were 3. Yes, you get that. You know, when we're in our teens, we can't wait to be 16 because we get that magic piece of paper that says, "My dad's going to have a heart attack trying to teach me how to drive." And then they get the little card, and then they're allowed to go drive. And both parents and their grandparents and all of their elderly friends are scared to death to be out on the road with them driving. And we can't wait for them to get better at it. And we're always leaning forward. We're yearning for something we don't yet have. And it's always attached to time. Because it's not now, it's later. But we want later to be now, and we understand that. But because God has woven himself into time, he actually dropped into time for the Son. He designed time. He is woven into time. And so if you stop and think about the things that we yearn for going forward, as we think about God has our very best in mind, God has hard though for long periods of time, for some of us, some we're smarter, we get it early, we don't recognize that it is God that we're yearning for. But it is this eternity that He's placed within our hearts. We want to know the future. God wants us to know Him. And as we live toward the future, we begin to recognize Him in more and more things. One of my favorite things to do is hang out with people who are much older than me. And as I get older, my groups get smaller or closer to my age. But I still love hanging out with them because they have stories that I don't have. Some of them I'm scared to have. But they have stories, and they help me lean forward, imagining what God might yet have for me. It's a divine thing, this yearning. The Scripture tells us that God has set eternity in our hearts, and we're leaning forward. Because when we get to the end, God wraps it up, and we step beyond time. It stops. The clock stops ticking. And what we have is an experience that He says is going to be the best experience ever. Face to face with Him forever. Now, I cannot even begin to imagine what that's like. The other morning, Dale and I were out at the reservoir, and I threw out a silver Phoebe, and it hit the surface of the water, and I cranked twice. And a bass grabbed it and leaped out of the water, danced on his tail, and fell back into the water with the lure. And my heart was going, because that was why I was there. Nothing else the rest of the morning, but that was why I was there that morning. It was also great to hang out with Dale with no intent. But you and I, don't we have moments like that? We realize this is why. What God is telling us as we yearn forward, this is why. Because we were wired to be with Him. And He can't wait. Principle number three, seize the day. You ever heard that phrase, seize the day? Carpe diem. Say that with me. Carpe diem. Latin experts. Isn't that great? I love it. Ecclesiastes 3, verse 12. I know that there is nothing better for men than to be happy and do good while they live, that everyone may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all his toil. This is the gift of God. Now, I do know that some people grab this passage, this verse, and they use it to defend the search for the happy life. Boy, are they off target. Have totally missed what Scripture, what Solomon is trying to give us here. This is after describing the contents of life. Solomon has already listed. He's explained that God is in control. He has blown the dust off our ignorance. We can't fully understand that. He has opened up the longing of our heart. So we're like, oh, now I know why I'm leaning forward. Although we don't lean too far forward. Because I don't know very many people. I know a few that can't wait to be with God because, well, then it's because it's perfect. The rest of us are like, yeah, I can't wait to be with God after I live my life and have a lot of fun and happiness. But Solomon here is trying to prepare us to make the most of life. Carpe diem. Seize the day. That's what this verse is about. It's not about licentiousness. You know, the idea of living without rules. I can do whatever I want because God wants me to be happy. But it's an invitation to make the most of life. Actually, to make the most of the 86,400 seconds you get every day. I've consumed 20 minutes of your life so far this morning. Got two more minutes to go. But I'm hoping it's an investment in Thursday afternoon or the following Monday. You know I preach out of the NIV. I mean, we read out of the NIV because that's what's in the pews. But I preach out of the NIV because I love the NIV. It speaks in our language today. But they blew it here. In that verse, they said, there's nothing better than for men to be happy. That's not what Solomon said. What Solomon said, the word he used, the Hebrew word he would have used, it means embrace the joy. Not be happy, but embrace the joy. Capture the joy of life. Capture the joy of the moment when that bass was up on the water going like this. Man, My heart grabbed that. I was thrilled. Was I happy? Fleeting, because I didn't get it to the land. I couldn't have Dale take a picture of it so I could brag. I could just tell you a story and you're like, yeah. He got a fist this big, but his arms are up here. But it was a good moment. And so when you live, whether you're playing or working, do it with and for joy. And I know there's some stuff we do that's just hard. Look for the joy in it. Look for God in it. Grab that moment so that we might actually own for ourselves, seize the day as a theme for our lives. Not grab as much as you can, but what you do hold, make the most of it. Make the most of those moments. Make the most that you can of the 86,400 seconds that you are given every single day. And so at night when you lay down your head, or if you're third shift in the morning when you lay down your head and you're thinking back, you go, I didn't waste it today. I didn't waste it today. So Solomon, just summarizing here, three significant truths for our daily lives. First, God has a plan. He has a plan for our lives and for His creation. You know, we're part of creation. He has a plan for everything that He made. He set it in order. He set it in motion. It's within Him because it's smaller than Him. And He's waiting for it to come together in such a way that it just merges with Him. We're together with Him in a perfect way. Yearn for eternity. And it's normal. It's normal to lean forward. It's part of God's design to lean us toward the future, which becomes us with Him. And then thirdly, see today. It's a strong life practice as we seek to not wait, but to make the most of the moments that we have been given. To make the most of the moments we have been given. And I think this is a serious issue for us. We face every single day, and it involves the stewardship of 86,400 seconds every day. We are responsible for that. Gary talked about our stewardship of our money. We are responsible for our money. We work, we receive, we get gifts. We're dumped on by God with all of the blessings that He gives us. And all He asks is that we worship Him by giving something back. Well, our time. He gives us time. He created time. We didn't think of it. He wove it into creation. From how fast the planets revolve around the sun and the moon around the earth, all of that, it's perfect. We don't have an engineer on the planet ever that could have designed something like that. God did it for us so that we could measure our day and seize them and make the most of them. What will we do with those moments? Will we use them for ourselves? We will use them for the good of the world around us, including the people around us? Will we, like Mike, risk the trap for the cheese? Or will we simply waste the moments? Listen to the 14 couplets again. They're going to go up on the wall behind me. Do I have one that are marked in red? There it is. Okay. I went through, and I did what I'm going to ask you to do. As I read these couplets, think to yourself, which ones have I done? Which ones do I not want to do? And which are still left? The ones in red, I have already done them at least once. I have one crossed off, and I have one that remains. Listen to your life. The time to be born, the time to die. The time to plant and the time to uproot. The time to kill, the time to heal. The time to tear down and the time to build. The time to weep and the time to laugh. The time to mourn and the time to dance. The time to scatter stones and the time to gather them. The time to embrace and the time to refrain. The time to search. The time to give up. The time to keep. The time to throw away. The time to tear. The time to mend, the time to be silent, the time to speak, the time to love, the time to hate, the time for war, the time for peace. Can you see your life in Solomon's 14 prophets? Are you leaning toward eternity? I don't know about you, at the end of the day, I want to feel like I've done something important. I want to feel like I've made a difference. I tease that I want to be worth the oxygen that I consume today. You thought I was going to say oxygen, didn't you? I want to be worth the oxygen I consume. And my life is a gift back. Not that I can ever repay God for what He's given me, but I sure can honor Him with my life. And I invite you to do something similar. Seize the day. Look at time. Look at it as opportunity. Look at it as the path toward eternity. Face to face with God. But until then, we get glimpses. And sometimes we don't even understand the glimpses.